Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Talk is Jericho, baby. Talk is Jericho. Talk is Jericho, mama. Talk is me.
All right, welcome to Talk is Jericho. It's the pot of thunder and rock and roll. I am fresh off the Jericho cruise. The third time's a charm. Probably the best one we've done so far. We had a blast on the boat. If you joined us, you know. If you weren't able to come on the next one, it's vacation of a lifetime. The four-leaf clover is leaving March 14th to the 18th, 2022. So only about 5 months from now, we're going back to Nassau from Miami. Go to ChrisJerichoCruise.com to find out all the information. Do not miss out. I'm probably going to do a special episode of Talks Jericho discussing the third Jericho cruise, the triple whammy. It was so much fun. You can still hear my throat is still scratchy from all the stuff that I did. And I know everybody that came on board said it was the best vacation they've ever had. And that's all I needed to hear. So, speaking of vacation, we are not taking a vacation. We go to Europe. We're coming to rock and roll for all of you for the first time in three years, I think it is. Starting November 29th in Liverpool, the famous Cavern Club Fozzy returns for the Save the World Tour. There's only a handful of tickets left for that show. Manchester is sold out. December 1st, Newcastle, still tickets available for the Riverside. Glasgow sold out. Dublin sold out. Belfast in Northern Ireland at Limelight One still has a few tickets left. Chester is sold out. Birmingham at the Mill still has tickets. Bournemouth at the old fire station still has tickets. Swansea sold out. Nottingham sold out. London sold out. So go to FozzyRock.com and get tickets for those remaining shows and get your VIP meet and greet. We play a mini set of five songs that you're not going to hear later on that evening, some of them at least. And we meet you, we greet you, we hang out. It's a grand old time. So go to FozzyRock.com for all that information. All right, today, Scott Norton makes his Talk as Jericho debut. Scott had an incredible career at New Japan Pro Wrestling. He was also one of the only wrestlers to be in both NWO Japan and NWO in the United States. He's a highly decorated arm wrestling champion as well. We're talking about all of that. We're going to hear the story about how he ended up wrestling in North Korea as part of the Collision in Korea 1995 pay-per-view, which was jointly produced by New Japan and WCW. Two nights of wrestling at Pyongyang's May Day Stadium. About 350,000 North Korean citizens filled the stadium over two nights, making Collision in Korea the largest attendance ever for a wrestling show. The main event of one of those shows was Norton versus Shinya Hashimoto for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. We're going to hear all about that and all about the crazy stories they went through. We heard about it on Dark Side of the Ring, but Scott's going to tell you all about it from a first point perspective. He's got some pretty incredible and terrifying details from his trip to North Korea, from the time he found out he was going to his arrival in the country, what happened after that leading up to the show. Not going to say anything else. You got to listen to Scott Norton. Starting now on Talk is Jericho.
Well, that's the thing, Scott. We'll just get right into it. It's doing the narration for the Dark Side of the Ring. And I saw you on the show and I was like, man, I haven't talked to Norton in so long. So much experiences that we had together and so many experiences that you had. And it's just like lots of stuff to talk about and have fun with, man.
Yeah, we'll do it. Let's go for it.
Did you get a lot of feedback from people from Dark Side of the Ring?
So just that when I did the Dark Side, you know, I did all my couple, 3 hours of interviewing about North Korea. Then the last thing they asked me about was what happened between Hawk and Scorpio. I just wished it would have never came out, you know, because a lot of that didn't happen.
Gotcha. But the point is, I'm sure a lot of people were excited to see you again after not seeing you on screen for so long.
That was awesome. Yeah, I got a great feedback on it. Super great. And I mean, the show's great. You know, I just, what happened in North Korea compared to what was, you know, it was way worse. It was, I mean, I honestly never been that scared in my life as far as it, you know, day by day. third day, I was absolutely petrified when they took me in by gunpoint, basically interrogated me for about 3 hours.
Well, let's talk a little bit about this. So you guys went to North Korea. For people that haven't seen the show, and we'll do our own version of it for briefly. You went to do a show in North Korea in front of 150,000 people or whatever it was. But when you got there, it's still North Korea. It's basically a communist country.
Yeah. You see, the thing about when I found out I was going to North Korea, I'm in the locker room with me, Chono, Masa, you know, Chris Benoit was there. All the boys, you know, and Hattori came up to Masa, then Masa came up to me, says, Scott, you booked North Korea. And I'm going, what? You know, yeah, you booked North Korea. Everybody booked North Korea. And all of a sudden the locker room just went dead silent. And I look at the Japanese boys, you know, and you know all of them, and they're all huddled up and they're going, oh my God, you know, so I'm going like, you know, I was a crazy man back then. I mean, I was just going 100 miles an hour, my hair on fire. I mean, I really didn't stop. And, you know, I see CNN was on in our hotel rooms all the time, but I didn't pay attention to it. You know what I mean?
Right.
Anyways, I go up to Chona. I said, Chona, man, what's the matter? He says, we don't think we come home from North Korea. This may be bad. They hate us. And, you know, I talked to Masa and I talked to Hattori. I said, you know, just be safe for us to go. Yeah, no worries. And then we found out Muhammad Ali was going to be there with Inoki. And that was enough firepower for me, mm-hmm. you know, because I started, you know, getting a little, you know, asking questions. And I'm going, yeah, God. But when we got there, they thought we were like the Vikings coming in, whatever they call it when they ambush.
Rape and pillage.
Pillage, yeah. I mean, they thought we're just, they looked at us like we were killers. I mean, and nobody smiled, and it was just, it was horrible to see people live under them conditions. And what I mean, if you were in the military, you're a normal person. If you weren't, you're wearing these big baggy clothes. Everybody wore the same thing, and you weighed about 60 pounds. And I'm not kidding you. Hmm. Their faces were all sunken, their eyes were all sunken. It was just terrible. And, you know, they looked at us like just monsters. And I've learned after that 4 days, the very next day in that stadium, we're the first venue, or that was the first, that stadium was brand new. Mm. The next day they had public executions in there.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. And I've learned this from a guy that's doing a Netflix thing from Europe. And this guy is just, I mean, he's studying it. I mean, it's more of a, you know, educational thing with this one, you know, shock value deal. And he's told me things that, you know, they use our pictures still, propaganda. You know, I mean, it just, it was crazy, you know. And what happened with that Daniel Warmbier, he took a poster off the wall and he got basically, you know, tortured and killed.
Oh, wow.
I mean, what I did, you know, like, they were listening to my phone, you know, because we all were trying to call home for a few days, right? And that's how this started out with me. I'm trying to call my wife, just got married. And we had, the elevators weren't working. They turned them off. So we had to run 7 floors every time we left the hotel. Downstairs, it was crazy. You know, we're big guys. I mean, you'd have been fine, but me, man, it's a little bit. But anyways, Chris Benoit went through this too, brother. He's trying to call home too. You know, and so when you went down, you went downstairs in the basement, you got the operator, they would connect you. Hmm. And now here's Grace up the stairs. I would hear my phone ringing down the hall. By the time I got to it, dead silence. Hmm. This went on 2 days. Finally, I kind of lost it a little bit. I'm just getting pissed, you know. So I finally, they let me get through. And it was by the grace of God, I'm telling you. And so anyways, I'm on the phone and I start talking to Tammy. She just starts browbeating the hell out of me. She thought I was all partying. I mean, she's just going off. I says, Tammy, you don't understand. Slow and settle.
Right.
And she's just going and going. And you ain't got time. I said, Tammy, I said, and I just said it. I said, you're some kind of shithole. I'm in here. Next thing you know, the phone goes click. Hmm. And I thought she hung up on me. I fired the phone down on the bed because there's these big, Well, you weren't that, sorry. But these big giant canopy beds were just the biggest pain in the ass you ever could imagine. This hotel, nobody's in there for years. I'm talking decades. So anyways, I'm sitting there and I'm going, I cannot believe you. Everything I've tried to do to get in touch with my wife, she hung up on me. And it was like $17 a minute. So anyways, I get a huge knock on my door. Bah, bah, you know, big man. I open the door and I'm ready to kill somebody. Here it's four guards with weapons and this guy in a suit. And he starts questioning me and I'm going, you know, and I said, I got in an argument with my wife. I mean, what are you talking about? I said, you're bugging my phone and everything. We don't argue with our wives here. And they took me away and they walked me down the stairs and we walked right past where we were making the phone calls and we went under like, this hallway's long ways. And then I go in this room and I'm in this small room. Now I'm sweating bullets. I got guards, and you know, they're looking at me like I'm just disgusted. They just put a bowl in my head. They'd have been fine. And they start bringing in these different military people, you know, and the last guy to come in, he was in another end of the room and he's looking back at me like, I'm going, God damn, they're going to kill me. I mean, I'm freaking. I mean, I was wearing a tank top and a pair of Zubas, and I was sweating bullets. I mean, I was soaked. And they come over and they start just browbeating me, man. We're going back and forth, and I'm just going, man, whatever you want. This is how we do it in America. I'm in your country, whatever, please. You know, I mean, they don't even know I'm there, basically. And I don't know if I talked my way out of it. He says, go back to room. And I said, how do I get back to the damn thing? I didn't cuss him. I mean, I was about as nice as I could ever possibly be in my life. And they bring me back, and then they brought me up the elevator.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, because they didn't want nobody to see this. And I was like, I'm walking out of the elevator. I go back to my room, and I sit down, and I go, oh, my God. Hawk's room is right next to mine. So I go knock on Hawk's door. And I said, Mike, you ain't gonna believe what just happened. He said, what was that big commotion? What were they saying? And I said, man, they just came and got me. I finally got through calling home. He says, I told you that you shouldn't even try. Just call over to get back to Japan. I said, hey, Mike, that brother. And we're going, I'm telling what happened. Then all of a sudden, Tori found out about it. Now, here comes the Tori. He's out knocking on my door when I'm in Hawk's room. Tori, you know, and all of a sudden, he goes, what are you doing? I said, and I told him what happened. I said, it's a conversation. You and Tammy argue too much. I said, I've been trying to call for 3 days, you know. So anyways, it was just like, now I'm under it. Masa squashed that. He squashed everything.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour. And they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Here's situations leading up to it. We're in this big, huge arena, and they're doing all these events and everything. They're trying to put us out in front of the people so they can, you know, we're going and putting flowers on these people's everything. When they wanted to do something with you, they wanted your attention. They didn't say, hey, excuse me, or hey, Scott, or nothing like that. They just grabbed you and started walking.
Hmm.
Back then, that just didn't work for me, you know? So the guy grabbed me by my arm and he pulled on me and I pulled my arm back and he grabbed it again and I flinged him about 5 feet. And all of a sudden, then he came up and, you know, I'm about ready to snap, you know, I mean, and Masa come running over, you can't do that, you got to slur. But, you know, probably should get through this next 4 days and all this, you know, and I'm saying, yeah, I'm trying, Masa, but this is crazy. And, you know, they did not want us there. They hated us. I mean, they're bringing us out in the stadium, and then they march all these nuclear weapons past us, the military.
Wow.
People are looking at us like, that's for you. You all have me. The plan, you know, we're gonna take the United States out, man. I mean, and they hated the Japanese people just as much. You know, there was one time out of the whole time there, me and Flair were going to the first show on the third night. This is the day that all that crap happened. Now I gotta go wrestle main event against Hashimoto. We're driving, and these roads are 8 lanes wide. I'm going, why the heck? I haven't seen a car since I've been here, unless it was the ones that are transporting us back and forth. There's no vehicles in this country. And what we found out is they use them as air bases for war. They feel that they're going to be going to war.
Hmm.
So we're driving, and I'm sitting with Flair, and Flair was scared to death. I mean, what they did to Rick was crazy, because he was doing all the propaganda stuff. They're trying to get him to turn on the United States.
Wow.
They were all over Rick. But anyways, I said, Rick, this is unbelievable. I said, look at the crowd we're drawing. And the driver goes, excuse me, can I say something? And I said, you speak English? Yes. And all of a sudden I said, he goes, what do you mean by draw? And I said, well, we're drawing a really huge crowd today. This is going to be really good. He says, you not draw nothing. He says, forced attendance. If they don't show up, they get a bull in the head.
What?
Yeah, swear to God. And I mean, was this serious? And Flair, you know how Rick is. Rick's, he's just going, oh my God. it was just insane, you know. I mean, and then, you know, like we did all these little events and everything. And it was all set up to make us look bad, them look good, like we're worshiping them. You know, I mean, it was just. And then one day when we went up this temple, I mean, this walk here would have got anybody. I mean, it was 3/4 of a mile up, straight up these big marble giant stairs. And it was unbelievable. You know, Muhammad Ali's walking along, he's got his little entourage of people that take care of him. And, you know, it's all the boys, and we're all, with all the military, we're all going up this staircase, and Ali started popping, you know, moving better. Next thing, he pops his jacket off. It was just a fake. He wore a black suit, black slacks, little black tie with a white shirt. And all of a sudden, he took his jacket off. He flipped to his guy, and then he took his tie off, and he started jogging up the stairs.
Hmm.
And I'm going, look at this, you know. And it was me, Scott Steiner, and Rick, and Hawk, all walking together, and all of a sudden, we started going quicker. And I remember, this is funny as hell. Steiner, you know, because now we're picking the pace up. And Scotty's walking next to me, and Hawk's here, and Rick's over there. And Scotty goes, hey, Norris, he says, carry me, would you? And I said, I've been carrying for the last 4 years. I said, he goes, that's a good one. I'm going to get you for that. Now me and Scotty are going back and forth up the stairs. But as soon as we got up the stairs, you know, we're kind of running, you know, because we want to see what the hell's going on up there. Here's Muhammad Ali's shadow box. And it was unbelievable. It was like the top of the world. It was just incredible. And he's moving around like in his heyday, you know, it's to us. And we watched that, and I just was like, this is the most unbelievable thing I've ever seen. But then as he's exercising, he's working out, he probably did it for 4 or 5 minutes. And all of a sudden you can see him. It's coming back. And all of a sudden he's like this. And all of a sudden they had towels. They wiped him down. They got him all dressed back up. And I talked to his, I cannot remember the guy's name. It's been so many years. And he says, when he pulls out of it, he works out. He loves, you know, he misses boxing so much. And I said, how often does that happen? It's not a lot. He said, you're very fortunate to see this day. And it was one of the greatest things I've ever witnessed.
Because he had Parkinson's so bad at that point.
Yeah, he did. It was sad. He was an unbelievable individual. I mean, still wanted to make you laugh, make you have fun. You know, he did something in the airport when we're waiting for the flight. All the boys, it was the hottest day in history of Japan. It must have been 110 degrees, and we're all supposed to wear all these suits and ties and all this. And it was just horrifying. But anyways, we're all huddled around waiting to get on this plane. And all of a sudden, you hear this huge commotion off in the distance. It's Ali coming. And he's feeling better. He's having a day. You know, because he did something that was unbelievable, because he's coming in, and he's going, "I want you." Everybody's looking back like, who's he talking to? And it was me. He came right up to me, and he gets he's poking me in the chest, and all of a sudden we did the, and the camera just went, it was crazy. Then all of a sudden he pulled the plastic thumb out. He started doing magic tricks, and everybody knew, but he just made people smile, just like he just right there made him the happiest man on earth. It just he loved it. And then once we got on the flight, me and Hawk were sitting together, and it was Ollie right in front of Hawk. And Ollie loved Hawk's interview. He knew Hawk from the wrestling, And he loved it when he say, "Well, Mike, well," and he would laugh. So he told him a story about Terry Funk's pig. You've heard the story, I'm sure.
I don't think so.
Oh, God, it's hilarious. And the way Hawk does it, he does the voice. Terry Funk, he told Ollie that story 10 times. Then he broke it, he picked the newspaper up and started doing Walter Cronkite to him, and then Ollie died. Those parts of the trip were just, anything to do with what he was part of, we were open. It was fun as hell. Rest of it, you can keep it. Food, everything.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Well, you mentioned that you went over there as part of New Japan, and you were a really big name in New Japan for many, many, many years. How did you end up going over there in the first place? Is that from the Minneapolis connection?
Well, no. You see, what happened is all the guys went right into the business. And to be honest with you, I didn't have the confidence to do it. I didn't like big crowds. I wasn't comfortable being a pro wrestler. I wasn't even thinking about it. It wasn't even on my radar. It was just something I knew I probably could do, because I was an athletic guy. I was a big, strong man. But it's something that just kind of frightened me a little. Not frightened, but I just wasn't comfortable with. And when I started, my arm wrestling career led me to pro wrestling in Japan. So anyways, Hawk used to go crazy. He wanted me in the business so bad, it was unbelievable. We're best buddies, and he just would go nuts. He said, "You got to do this." No, he said, "You can do it." And I said, "Man, I might just hate doing that." And he finally got tired of doing it. So anyways, when Over the Top, the biggest arm wrestling tournament still today, was put together, they sent me to Japan before the tournament to promote the movie and promote the arm wrestling. So they had a big tournament in Japan. I went over as one of the arm wrestlers and, so on and so forth. Remember the referee, Peter Yamaguchi? No, Peter Taki.
I don't remember his last name, but I know who you're talking about.
Yeah. So anyways, I'm at this arm wrestling tournament. And the people, they already knew, because Hawk always talked and always put me over every time he turned around. And so they knew who I was, kind of, in Japan by the magazines, maybe, I don't know. And then, the billing of one of the best arm wrestlers in the world and everything, I'm going against Cleveland and all that stuff. He approached me, he said, "You should think about pro wrestling in Japan." And I said, "Well, I'm not really, it's not that big of a deal for me, It's something I was honored. I was like flabbergasted. So then, Cleve Dean was the guy that nobody's ever beat. He was 6'10", 650-pound guy. And he crushed me the first time I wrestled. And, it kept getting closer and closer and closer. And then I put together like a madman. I went nuts in the gym for 2 years. I took a time off and then just, I concentrated in this tournament over the top and him. So I ended up just completely obliterating him in the tournament. It was unbelievable. And so when I went back to Japan, because I traveled with the movie, everywhere the movie went, I would be there. So I'm in Japan. Now they come with a serious offer. They said, you need to think about this. And I'm going, I'm going to need, consider this. And so anyways, we just couldn't pick up the cell phone back then and call your buddy up or whatever. So I call Hawk up through the channel once I got back to the States. And I said, hey, Hawk, I said, is New Japan a good company? Pro Wrestling New Japan, Japan? I said, yeah. He said, they're great. He says, well, they offered me a contract. He says, you don't take it, I'll kill you. Okay, they sent me to Brad Reagan's camp. I had a hell of a run there for a long time, and Masa, was just the greatest guy to work for. I, never any animosity, he and I, never any behind the back stuff. I'm a lucky guy. And that worked for me, Chris, because like night shows and the big shows were easy to do. Working in front of big crowds eventually was very easy to do. But in Japan, I was so much more comfortable because it fit like a glove. I was made for that, And it was a hard time, but not for a long time. I did about 18 years hard there. And, I had a mentality, started late. Very fortunate guy to get, I came in right behind Vader. I was the guy they were grooming right behind who I consider one of the best big men of all time.
Right, sure.
And, they opened the door for me and I wasn't going to miss a match. And I worked through stuff that I shouldn't have never done. So I never put myself, my wife through it, me through it. I'm broke down because of it. I'm getting way. I'm halfway there right now. Gotten both knees replaced and it's amazing. I've had knee pain since a year and a half now. Never. It's unbelievable. Now I need to get the shoulders worked on and, neck just like everybody else. I'm sure you got some struggles you're going through too. But, I just did something to myself. I wasn't going to miss a match and I worked through some stuff it was crazy.
It's interesting, too, because the style of New Japan was so much different in the 90s in that, like you mentioned, you were perfect. You were like tailor-made for New Japan at that time frame. Just a big, blocky, giant, strong guy with the legit sports credibility of arm wrestling and just having that. But when you're talking about working with Hashimoto and working with, all the guys, Chono, everyone was big back then like you.
Yeah, well. People that always talk to, they come up to you and they say, God, AJ Styles, how could he be the world champ? I said, you ever watch a match of this guy? How could he be a world champ? How couldn't he be?
Right.
They go by size. In Japan, it was always, you got this big ace, or the ace, And I've been old, I was brought back into Tokyo Dome and Omega went at it with this, I can't remember his name offhand. And I'm just going, we couldn't do that. I had crowds on the end of their seats just going, pounding their brains off, going nuts, how we did our style. But everything changes and evolves. And these guys are phenomenal. And you're one of them. And you know exactly what I'm talking about. Because that's the thing about what they don't get. This is nuts. Do you remember wrestling in a tag match against me in Cincinnati in a hockey arena?
I don't. Tell me the story.
Oh, shit. We're working a tag, and I can't remember who my partner was. They had it all set up, and the NWO did a run-in at the end, And they're, we were supposed to slide out and just let them eat you up. So anyways, I noticed you're standing there. And I said, I should get him out of that ring because they're just, I didn't like that run-in stuff. I really didn't.
Yeah.
So I had you by the boot and I pulled you down. and I blistered you with a chop. Blistered your ass. And I kind of backed away real quick, and I was like getting to the entrance, going up the little ramp. And so it was me and Buff. That's who it was. It was me. That's what we're doing, Vicious and Delicious. That's right. So anyways, I get to the I get to the curtain, and I get right through the curtain. You got to remember this, Chris, because you reached in the curtain, you pulled me back out and turned me around, and you blistered the daylight out of me. Don't you remember that?
I do remember it now. I remember it now.
This guy here, man, I said, you know, because I knew you had this hockey background, and you're a tough guy. You know, you didn't Hashimoto bring out the kicks out there. They don't understand that. You know, they got, you know, when they say things like, you know, what they've said, you know. But anyways, I'll never forget that.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
Do you remember when we were in Sapporo and we were having some drinks, and I had the Yakuniku, or sorry, not Yaku, the Yoko, the hot.
Yeah.
And you said, why don't you put it in my eyes as a joke? And I said, okay. And I rubbed it in your eyes.
I remember that. the thing about it, I couldn't believe you get it.
It's like hot stuff.
I should have learned quicker about the Canadian boys. I mean, because y'all different, man. I mean, I got a huge respect for all the guys from out of Canada. The guys are serious rivers. I mean, didn't back out by nothing. And plus, you went through the old ice tour. That's the craziest. Remember that?
Yeah. Did you do that too?
I did. I'll tell you something. I got released by AWA, which is I wanted to be, because I was going to go be Flair's bodyguard. Then that fell through, and so now I'm a guy without a job and just started pro wrestling. I didn't get it. I mean, they pulled me out of camp way too early. The third guy that I ever wrestled in AWA, when I locked up with him, he went down. And he said, just pin me. I'm not going to touch you ever again. I said, what the hell do I got to do to get a match on around here? So anyways, I get a call from that Tony guy, Tony Condello, right?
Yeah.
And he says, I'd love to work, use you. He painted a picture. We're going to stay in hotels every night. It's Polo Park, and it's just all this great stuff. Then the last thing he said to me, he said, make sure you bring a sleeping bag. And I said, what? And he hung the phone. So I get there, and he was serious about the sleeping bag, and you know what I'm talking about. But I learned a lot there because it was Pitbull Brown, right?
Yeah, Gary Brown.
I wrestled him every night. And he said, by the end of this, he says, you're not going to be green no more. And I thought, if I got faded through this hell tour, I wouldn't be green. But he taught me a lot. It was good I went, but I think Tony Condell is the only guy that I ever really wanted to end his life. I was ready to kill that man. And then when he stiffed me on my pay, he was cutting this old lady's hair, older woman's hair. And I come barnstorming into his shop, and he knew that I was coming for the money, He just turned around, opened up the cash with that envelope, and handed it. He didn't say a word. I just went, what's this guy trying to get away with? Yeah, you Canadian boys, you didn't back down. You got the respect of this.
Here's a story for you. When I was, even before I was in the business, I used to set up the rings in Winnipeg.
I know.
Yeah, Valhalla, Minnesota, or something like that. You were I went to a show and you were there. And I remember, it's Scott Norton from Over the Top, the movie, the arm wrestling guy. And you taught me a trick about arm wrestling that I still use to this day. I call it the Scott Norton arm wrestling trick, where if you cock your wrist, you can always get the upper hand on the guy. And I use that to this day.
You on arm for about 2 freaking hours, remember?
Yeah.
You kept bugging me. I'm going, dude, I'll kill you. I mean, I'll rip your freaking, I mean, you don't want none of this. And that's what I was taking with John Norton. We're the Lumberjacks.
Right.
Just tear his arm off, Norton. So I said, well, I got to tear it.
I was 18.
Yeah, I know. And you're just like a mosquito when you got one in your car and you're on a trip and you can't get them. And all of a sudden you wake up the next morning, you got 7 mosquito bites on your legs. Yeah, finally I said, come here. And I, pop. And then you're a cool tell. You could tell that you wanted to.
Oh, yeah. I was looking for it, right?
Put a little back pressure and do the over-the-top move right here like that. And you went on to beat big guys in bars and stuff, right?
I did. Yeah, I did.
It's amazing what if you can learn it. Arm wrestling just is a brute strength. It's the strongest guy knows when to put the technique into work at the right proper times. And, I'd have never left arm wrestling if it was like it is today. I still train like an arm wrestler. When I train my upper body, I can't do shoulders and chest or back too much. I got to put CBD roll on to go walk. I'm turning into like a cardio guy right now. I'm 282 pounds. I made a mistake. Every time I go to my cardiologist once a year, when I get home, I can't answer the questions my wife's asking me. She's too smart for me, and she asks these questions I can't answer.
Right.
So I brought her with me. So he could just say, directly tell her. Well, he could be a little bit more active. So now, ever since then, I'm on a grain-free diet, plant proteins. I mean, I'm eating perfect. And now I'm a cardio guy. I mean, every night I walk 4.6 miles. People think I'm trying to catch her and molest her or something. Because, I mean, we're out there, brother. I'm trying to get to 275. I can't break the 282 mark. I started this about 330, 325. I feel great. But, no, I still train as an arm wrestler. It's a blast. They have equipment now. If I had that equipment back in the day, they'd arrest me. Seriously. I was strong. I was good. But this stuff here, it's amazing.
So what's the secret, like, being such a decorated arm wrestling champ? Is there a certain strategy to it, or is it more intimidation? Or
I was just that. But I was lightning quick. Lightning quick. And I could work up on put it this way, if I'd have been a sprinter or a defensive lineman, I'd have best first step in the NFL and in the Olympics. Honest. I mean, I could just, with the arm wrestle, I could explode better than anybody I've, seen. And then plus I could back it up with a lot of strength, and I stayed high on the table. So I was always in a powerful move where everybody else folds back away from the table and they get out here. I made you stay with me. You know what I mean? And if you're going to beat me, you got to stop that explosion. Then you got to be stronger than them. And Cleve was that guy. I've been beat 8-9 times by, top guys, but that's grown starting up the last 3-4 years. Nobody's close. I mean, Johnny Brzezink, a guy. Now, this is, like going back with yourself and AJ Styles, Kenny Omega, these guys that have taken over the super heavyweight scene, basically, in Japan. You know what I mean? Seriously.
Right.
We got a guy named Johnny Brzezink. Johnny goes about 230 and is the greatest arm wrestler that ever lived.
Wow.
And I'm glad to say that I'm 3-0 against him and just crushed him. But he'd have figured it out. No, sir, that good. I mean, and the thing about it is he worked for Western Airlines. This is how old he is. Back in the day when there was Western Airlines, he could go anywhere in the world for free. He was a mechanic for the jet airplane engines. And he did. Every top Russia he went there, every country that there was a super strong dude, he flew there, did super matches with him, either won, lost, whatever. I mean, this dude was a monster on the table. But Chris, once you start getting a little older, you kind of forget what you're talking about.
No, it's good. No, you got it. I was just asking you kind of about the technique for arm wrestling. But I want to go back to Japan too, though. You mentioned the super heavyweights and the way it was then. Who were some of your toughest rivals that you really had the best matches with in New Japan?
Choshu, Hashimoto, had great matches with Yuji, Nagata, Chono, Muda, of course. I mean, God, Muda was phenomenal. Then remember the big blonde-haired fella?
Fujita?
Not Fujita. He was good, too. But the guy that fought Don Fry.
Takayama.
Takayama.
Yeah.
Takayama was a man. And I'm so sad, you know, to where he's at right now. With a simple sunset flip.
Yeah. He's currently, I think, a quadriplegic at this point.
Yeah, he is.
Yeah.
And, out of all of them, him and Tenryu was a tough guy too, brother. I mean, tough guy. We had some chop wars that were their mentality is they're going to die on the sword. I mean, they're going to just keep coming at you. And they did that. You know, and there's some guys that, you know, I mean, I had great matches with Lager. I don't know how you couldn't. I mean, he's so freaking good. I mean, but I did, you know. I wrestled Lager on his birthday in his hometown.
Hmm.
Well, happy birthday to Deuce. You know, because, I mean, I was going over, you know. And those guys, you know, they did me so right. New Japan was such a great company. I'm not saying it's not a great company now, but when I started with New Japan, the loyalty factor was everything was on a handshake. I signed contracts, don't get me wrong. But everything was, you know, a handshake, and that was it. And everybody that was loyal to me pretty much is out of the company or has passed on, and which is sad. But back then that was just the we had NWO going strong as hell over there. It was just unbelievable. It was just the greatest place to work. And I was so comfortable there. You know, I mean, you were WCW, WWF, WWE. And I mean, those are some, it's a little bit different kind of a dogfight pony show in there, these places. You got to really defend yourself. You really got to, you know, and it just, to me, I had my home and I loved my time in WCW, don't get me wrong. I would have gone to WWE if a couple things wouldn't have happened. And, you know, I'm glad that the path I took is the path I took. I mean, you can't change it now or look back. But New Japan was just perfect for me. It was just my style worked for them.
Well, even being the IWGP champion, there's only been a few foreigners that have had that. And you won it twice. I mean, that's a huge deal.
Yeah, you know, they put me in some great spots. And you know, Masa used to tell me, you trust me, right? And I said, of course. He says, you're going to have a great career here. Patience, please. Just give me, you know. And you know, I mean, I busted my ass to try to learn this stuff and try to be this killer they wanted me to be. And then also these guys to trust me with their bodies, you know what I'm saying?
Right, exactly.
After about 3-4 years of it, I was taking massive. I mean, they beat my ass too. I mean, it wasn't just a one way street. You know, the knuckles were hurting, but so were there.
Yeah.
I mean, they just keep, you know. And it was. And I remember one day I'm sitting in the locker room, and Moscow, he says, "You need to learn to work now." I'm going, "What the hell have I been doing for the last 3 years?" You know, I just loved it there.
Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit TrueGreen.com, TrueGreen.com to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
You also mentioned, too, NWO Japan. You're one of the few guys that was in the NWO in the States and an NWO in Japan.
Yeah, that was awesome. This is the truth. With me, Jeff Farmer, and Buck, we just get done doing the whole East Coast thing. We're all over the place, and we're going to Japan. We flew direct out of Detroit. And, I mean, I was just wiped out. We're on like 13 or 14 days. And this is the first time we're going there as NWO, you know. And you remember when we used to come in the early 90s, there would be reporters at the airport.
Yeah.
And the magazines would be out. Well, that started to stop towards the end of the 90s, mid-90s. And so anyways, when we got to the airport, everywhere was black and white NWO shirts. Reporters everywhere. It was like Tiger Woods coming in for the Masters or something. Just, I don't know what it was. And then they actually, nobody gave us the heads up on this. They want us to speak. Yeah, right. I just slept 12 hours. we weren't in our NWO stuff or anything. You know, we weren't just that or anything, but if we knew we were to be doing an NWO thing, we'd have been ready for it, you know? So anyways, we did a little talk and then all this. Finally get to the shuttle or the bus and takes to the Kiyo Plaza. We get off the Kiyo Plaza. It was solid black and white NWO shirts everywhere. I'm just going, this is crazy. I've never seen it like this before. You know what I mean? The following people would be, you know, you've seen Inoki.
Yeah.
Ricky Choshu, you know, they know the Goldberg chants here, the Choshu chants and over there were phenomenal. These guys, you know, the bus would pull up to the arenas and there'd be people all over the place. They just wanted to see you, touch you, whatever. This was crazy. So the next morning, I get up, you know, got the breakfast buffet downstairs at Kiyo. Man, I mean, it took me 20 minutes to get from the elevator into that restaurant. Because I was the guy that always signed, like a dumbass. You know, I did it differently over there. I Tiger Jens Sanger with the Tiger One Sword. I mean, somebody come and ask him for an autograph, he knee him in the gut, pop him in the head, throw him in the bushes. You know what I mean? I was always the guy that, you know, I'm going to just do it differently. I'm going to be this monster heel in the ring. I'm going to treat him okay out here. And I did that, and it worked. We must just get crazy about it. But, I mean, the following in Japan was crazy. So, anyways, I went up to the room, got ready to go, come out of the lobby. It's some fans everywhere. They're going crazy. We walked to the bus, and here they took the bus, and they put it, I don't know how many hundreds of $1,000 paint job. They put this NW paint job on the bus, but it was unbelievable. And I mean, they changed everything for this NWO. The bus takes to the train station. We go get on the train station. Here's Chono on this big billboard with an NWO shirt on with a can of coffee. Man, this is getting started here, you know? Mm-hmm. It was just crazy. But yeah, I went over really well. It was, you know, nobody understood that. And it's okay, you know, I mean, because I wrestled Peter Orts, the world champion kickboxer.
Yeah, Peter Orts, yeah.
Yeah, and I wrestled at the Sumo Palace in 2017. I probably shouldn't have took that match. I mean, it was his first wrestling match, and it turned into a wrestler kickboxer, and I had to make him tap, basically. I always did kill me. But anyways, the only reason I'm bringing this up is when I came out for that, you know, it was sold out, 12-5 or whatever. there was 500, maybe 700 people NWO shirts though. And then, I mean, there was a Chono impersonator guy, looked just like Chono, but just a little miniature dude. Glasses, looked just like him. He was there, but he just older, started to turn gray. And I'm just going, these people just never stop, man. They love
it. How was it for you being in the NWO in the States, conversely?
It kind of worked against me because every time I had to leave, then they didn't use me properly. And maybe they did, but half the time wasn't there to be used. You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
I'm not saying the only thing I was worried about, but the thing I was most worried about, I was always told, never F up your Japan deal. And I never did. I mean, I stayed loyal to that company. And, you know, I never missed matches for them. You know, it was pounded in my head, you're only as good as your availability.
Mm.
And starting late, I wasn't going to miss matches. And I didn't. Where I should have. I should have just taken some time to, you know, heal a torn bicep up a little bit more, or tricep, or some of these things. But it just, you know, I mean, I did it as a kid. You know, my old man was a hardcore guy. I mean, not us, but I mean, he was a hardworking man. And I grew up trying to impress him through my whole life. I always wanted, you know, be like my dad. And I remember playing ball. And this is where it comes from. And I dislocated my hip. At Parade Stadium, the big premier game of the week. Playing West High. And this, they break the huddle. The guy that I played against the year before was the same year as me. He was injured. Was a guy about 270. So, you know, this guy was a tough out. This guy breaks a huddle. He's 165 pounds. And I said to my center, and I'm playing those guys, I'm going to eat this guy's lunch. I'm going to kill this son of a bitch. They snap the ball. I slant where I'm supposed to slant. And that little son of a gun popped me and dislocated my hip. And this is even crazier. The guy's a highway patrolman, right?
Yeah.
Like 20 years later in Wisconsin, I get pulled over speed and I hand him my license and he's, you didn't go to Patrick Henry, did you? And I said, yeah. He said, you don't remember me. I said, no. I'll save you a speeding ticket. But so anyways, when he popped my hip, ambulance took me to the hospital. And I'm in North Memorial Hospital and they're trying to get my hip back in the joint. And it just, you know, but this is the era that I grew up in, how my family was. My brothers are like this and everything. And they finally got my hip and all of a sudden just made this noise. Boom. It was worse going back in than it was coming out. That was terrible. So anyways, they told my dad, they says, he's going to have to stay the night. He says, no, he's coming home with me. And they said, we strongly advise against it. He says, nope, he's coming home with me. So they said, okay. And so anyways, I'm in a room and we're sitting there, you know. And also they came with a wheelchair and they go, he goes, what's that for? She goes, that's for your son. He goes, no, he's walking.
Gotcha.
And he made me walk out of there. And that was just something that always stayed here. And when I was injured, I would tell myself, he's walking. And you know, I tried to do that. And that was something, you know, my dad passed away years ago. But that was something you get ready for a match with Vader or some big killer dude, you know. You go through things in your head, you know, there, especially because it's going to be a lot more of a war, you know. You remind yourself, you know, nope, I'm walking today, brother, you know, it's going to be all right. So that's just how we did it, you know.
Well, that was the style, yeah.
Yeah, it was, you know. And the thing about it is, that's Masa Sayo too. I mean, we both know Masa. And, I miss him. God, that was a great man. Good dude.
Yeah, awesome guy. I never asked you about this before. Were you a bodyguard for Prince?
Yeah. And here's the gist of it. You know, I know you got a musical background, and I learned that the first tour I was in Japan with you. First, before I answer that question, do you remember reading the Rolling Stones magazine in Japan, but the Japanese one.
Yeah.
I said, you can read that? And you go, not yet. That's what you told me. Not yet. But you're teaching yourself, is it kanji? Is that what? Yeah. And I'm going, I'm walking down in the bus. I'm going, this guy's too smart for us. You know, we go in the magazine, we just go.
Well, I'd been there so many times before. I used to work for Tenru over there, and I could never learn how to speak Japanese because it's very difficult to learn because it's different everywhere. So I thought, well, if I can read it, at least I'll be able to look at a menu or something. And so it was actually katakana that I learned, not kanji, katakana. Yeah.
But no, that just kind of just brought spark memory. But so anyways, do you remember the big blonde hair guy that used to bodyguard Prince named Chick?
Okay, yeah, for sure.
He entered an arm wrestling tournament in Las Vegas, world tournament. And to his bad luck, he had me in the first round. He's a monster dude, man. I mean, when I saw him, I said, I can give it to anybody. I mean, I'm going to hit it with everything I got. And I hurt him pretty bad. Didn't break anything, but I ripped him up hard. So he kind of stayed there and kind of rooted for me. And afterward, he said, he asked if I was interested in working for Prince. And I said, I'm bodyguard and everything. And I said, God, And this is right for the Purple Rain deal. And this is about as much, the most I've ever talked about it, Chris. So anyways, I went in for an interview. They interviewed me. They said, okay, we're going to give you a shot at this. Sent me to Denver for 4 days for some training. Came back, did the training. Then I went into the lawyer's office. Now, you bought a house. I bought houses numerous times. And you know the paperwork there.
Yeah.
Never signed more confidentially.
Right.
About not saying a word. So anyways, this is the truth. Now, use it as you want on this podcast. They can't anymore. But after his death, I started talking about it a little bit, right? And I was contacted by, you might want to watch what you're doing.
Really?
And is this, this can't be. So I thought, so a lawyer friend of mine, he's, I don't think that, but anyways, so I did go with Purple, for a little bit. And I got released by position.
Did you have interactions with Prince, or was he pretty, pretty secretive?
Well, yeah, this is crazy. In high school football, there's a guy named Colin Anderson, played for North High. Well, Prince went to a high school, Minneapolis Henry's right here, North High's right here, separated by about 2 miles. He never played, but he was there, and everywhere he went was next to Colin Anderson. Colin Anderson was an all-state center, and he was a nose guard. And I was an all-state nose guard, I played center. So we battled each other all the time. And Prince remembered that. But that's not why I got this position to work with him. But he knew that when I came on, he found out Scott Norton. That, kind of like the highway patrol dude, And so anyways, I had some, but it was just, I was a fish out of water. The crew that was going and running around there with those fellas, I did not fit with none of them. Right. I just did. I mean, it was just like all these musicians. What's the other band? Time. What was that guy's name?
Morris Day.
He was the coolest guy in the world. Yeah. He would come in, because Prince always had a popcorn machine with him, He'd get a bag of popcorn, and he'd always bring me a bag of popcorn. He'd look like you're hungry. and I felt really good around him. Chick was fine. And the other bodyguards are cool, but that group of people, it didn't work for me. It wouldn't have worked for me if I was working for a country band. It's just the musician scene. I was just kind of nuts. I got to watch this guy perform a lot in rehearsals. He was the hardest working individual I've ever seen. You remember when he did the Super Bowl halftime, Miami?
Yeah.
It was raining. And they're talking. They said, yeah, he won't be dancing today. And I said, believe me, this guy will not make one mistake. He works harder than anybody. He did all of his dancing that day. He rehearsed. You remember the song, How the Doves Fly?
Yeah, When Doves Cry.
When Doves Cry? Well, remember he used to do a song where he'd be sitting in a bathtub, right? Coming out of the ground, out of the stage. You ever see that?
No, I didn't.
Well, told him not to use the bathtub that day. I'm just flicking off things, stories that happened. So anyways, he's Prince. He's going to do what he wants. Here comes the bathtub out of the ground. He's in the bathtub. And I tell you, Chris, I've taken bumps harder getting out of bed. That bathtub was about this high off the ground, and it just went like this. Fell over on the side, and it was like they put him on a body board. So me and Huck, and Huck was this big, gigantic brother, and he was my partner. We made a new song. This is How the Tubs Fly. And so I don't even remember the words here. But they put me on the spot. They wanted me to perform, me and Huck, to sing that in front of Prince.
Oh, shit.
Yeah. Not good. So, I mean, I was not the best of graces with him. But, you know, I mean, yeah, that's just something he didn't do. And I got released for something just totally just not. If you weren't 100,000% behind him, any negative thing at all, up there. And, you know, it was time. I was like a fish out of water. I mean, but it was cool. I mean, I got to see all these, you know, some concerts and stuff. And it was unbelievable. I mean, he's just talented.
Last few questions for you, Scott. All the matches that you've had, is there one that stands out as your favorite? Or a few of them, at least?
What I loved in Japan, it didn't have to be TV. It didn't have to be the Tokyo Dome. It was some of these six-man tags you could have entertaining the crowds on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
3:30, 3 o'clock shows. And, you know, you got on the other side, you got, for crying out loud, you got Kinski, Hase, and Muda. And these guys, they're phenomenal, you know. Then we come in with me, Herc, and Samu or something. And place, and you're controlling these matches, you know. As far as like single matches and all that, sure. But I mean, those are the funnest matches I've ever had. Just doing your job and just the way that Japan was just something that just felt so good for me. You know, I mean, I had some great matches in Nagata. I had a great title match in Nagata. After Nagata fought the Krokob.
Yeah.
Krokob knocked him out. They kind of put me on remake Nagata night. And we went out there and I just said, you're going to do it my way. Otherwise, you know, it's ain't going to, you know, just follow me. And I hit that dude with everything. And he just made comeback after comeback. And I just, and, you know, we went, you know, 30 some minute long match. And, you know, I guess the best comp I've ever gotten in my life is when Lager was the booker. And this was the best match I ever had there. And I was in the locker room. He just came up and he shook my hand and he just said, perfect. And it was just, and he just kept saying it. And I'm going, you know, and I guess I did my, you know, deal. But it was a match where I wasn't going over. It wasn't IWGP title match or wasn't, you know, like with me and Herc did Steiner matches were freaking unbelievable.
Jurassic Express, yeah.
And then the Samoan boys, Ming, Samu, Kokina. I mean, we had unbelievable matches. But, you know, it wasn't always to a TV show or to a big event. You know, and we just took it, you know, it's a pride deal, you know. I mean, when you're following guys on the card, I remember, God, I see what his name. He wrestled Benoit for the junior in the final. And a year to the date, the next year, him and Benoit were the first match. You know what I'm saying? And it, the match that they had for the finals and the juniors wasn't as good as the first one of the show. Meaning, it's hard to follow these guys. You got to go out there and just try to kill it, you know? Mm-hmm. You got to do something, you know? And I mean, and, you know, it was just, it was an awesome deal. But, you know, I don't know why this popped in my head, but Black Cat used to do that a lot. Remember Black Cat, right?
Oh, yeah. What a great guy.
Yeah, what a great dude. But, you know, he'd be open to match a lot. And he'd come walking out, he'd be taking the tape off his wrist. He goes, follow that. I remember he wrestled Arn Anderson in the Tokyo Dome first match. And they never met. They didn't get to either locker room, nothing. Arn come walking in, he goes, what a hell of a hand. You know how good Arn is, right? And this is the first match of the Tokyo Dome. I said, well, it's all downhill from here, boys. Yeah. It was just unbelievable. So yeah, you know that part of the business, you know, when you enjoy it and you're having that kind of much fun, you know, doing your job, and just, and you know, you got this rhythm going on, and you know, and then you got all the great referees. We had just, it was such a different deal, you know, because we're together more.
Right.
The Sunday shows, we usually stop, had dinner, some nice steakhouse. It was a great time, man.
Is that what you miss most about the business, is the camaraderie?
Yeah, the boys, man. I mean, both sides of the pond. Just, you know, I've always heard, you know, these guys say, yeah, you miss that, miss the locker room. And I'm telling you, I do. And, you know, like today's, this is awesome to me. I mean, I enjoy this. I just, you know, I don't know if I get long-winded or start talking too long, too much. But I mean, you know, and we have a good time. You know, the guys are great. You know, I never got any beef with the guys, or, you know, I've always got along, try to be, you know, treat people the way you want to be treated, you know, and it's a dog-eat-dog business, man. And it's tough business, you know. I mean, but I miss that part of the deal. You know, we had a great time on the road, had a great time, you know, in Japan. It was different, but it was a lot. I mean, and it's something that when I get out and do these sign-ins and I get in front of some of the guys I haven't seen for years, and, you know, it's just awesome. And it's important, you know, it's important to stay a little active in this, you know, I mean. Hell, my knees are good. They've never been this good in the business. And I'm serious. I mean, they're just amazing. And I'm trying to strengthen them and do all the right stuff. I get these shoulders fixed, you know. They keep asking to come back to Japan. These, like a Legends match. And, you know, and then you get in there with a couple of guys, you know, that are just, and I want to go back and do it, you know, but I mean, I don't know if I could survive the match against Tammy to get over there to do that.
Couldn't survive the match against your wife, right?
Yeah.
Well, Scott, it's been great talking to you, man, and great reconnecting with you. And there's plenty of things that I'm sure we'll be able to see each other again when we get back on the road, for sure.
Yeah. Everything's going to get back to normal. Everybody's going to start traveling again, put this behind us. And, I do miss it. I did a sign-in. I've done one thing, basically, in New York. And it was great. You know, I did four events within 2 minutes of the airport and the hotel. It was just unreal. And I said, God, it's never been like this before. You know, but I mean, it's been over a year.
Yeah.
I know you're still pretty – you're staying as busy as you can, right?
Yeah. Yeah, it's not been so bad for us.
Yeah, so that's good. And but that's – it'll get back there, brother.
Well, dude, it's great seeing you, man.
Hey, right back at you, brother.